Welcome to the midweek Mission Ridge podcast known as Footnotes. Footnotes is here to give you some of the stuff that we didn't have time to cover in the sermon and encourage you to dig in deeper as you study the text. So let's dive in and check out what's in the footnotes. Welcome to another episode of Footnotes.
Welcome.
We are so glad you could join us.
Yes.
Indeed. Today we have myself, Logan Daly, and Rob Croyle.
I'm here.
Just the two of us.
Excited for this conversation.
It'll be great. If we threw any more people in here, we'd be talking all year.
We would. This is going to be a pound cake.
I have a feeling. I got a feeling. Because we're making such a big deal out of it, it's probably going to go short now.
Yeah, 22 minutes.
That is not going to be the case. I can almost guarantee that.
No.
But we might keep it under an hour.
Let's try. Let's see what we can do.
We'll see how much editing I have to do to keep it under an hour. It'll be great.
Yeah, we're going to sound like the chipmunks.
All right. So with that said.
Go for it, Alvin.
We want to start off with, I suppose we should start off with some shortcomings.
We should do that.
We should talk about Logan's shortcomings in the sermon. Namely, when I was listening to it, one, I have relearned this nasty habit of saying the word which is not a word. It's a sound.
It's a sound.
Oh, it's so bad.
I am going to try not to say the word.
Yeah, anyway, maybe we'll just give somebody in the front row a squirt gun.
Super soaker.
We're just going to give, we'll give Josh a super soaker. Maybe just a light soaker, and he can squirt me every time I say the next time I'm preaching, just for everyone's enjoyment.
There you go.
That sounds like a beautiful idea and a terrible idea. The other thing that I noticed was, at one point, I'm pretty sure I said the word debate about 6 times in 30 seconds.
Well, you know.
So, if you haven't listened to the recording, or you missed the sermon, or if you noticed it live, like, good for you. But if you haven't noticed that, go back and you can listen for that. It's a little comical once you notice it.
How did care group go last night? Did it strike any debates?
We had a lively care group last night.
Nice.
So for those listening that are not aware of the timeline of this, we record footnotes on Tuesdays most of the time.
Yes.
And I have my care group on Mondays, which falls after the sermon and before footnotes.
If you have said debate one more time, that would have been perfect.
Yeah. Were you trying to, you were trying to cue me in on that lively debate at care group?
Yes. Yes.
That's not fair. We had discussion, not debate discussion. Come on. Geez.
Trying to help you out.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's segue into our next segment of the discipleship moment of the week, where we want to talk about share environments. So why don't you tell us what those are, Rob?
Yeah, so the real life church Outpost Falls and the relational discipleship network that they created has these environments that they look at or that they talk about just as a way of communicating what does discipleship look like. And they talk about share environments, connect environments, minister environments, and disciple environments. And so these are different environments that you can think in terms of who can invite into and how, when I invite someone into that type of environment, what kinds of things can I expect to be able to happen is from a discipleship standpoint, and the shares being the most basic environment. And so what I wanted to do is one, talk about what are share environments. There's big environments, there's little environments, and we'll talk about that. There's environments that you could have at the corporate level. There's environments that you could create, you know, personally or individually or as a small group. And then what kinds of things do we think can happen in those environments, and why is that important? So the classic share environment that I remember at the Post Falls Real Life, we'd have, let me back up. And instead of describing the types of environments, let's talk about what that even means to have a share environment. In a share environment, you are sharing our lives, sharing new truths, and sharing new habits. And I love this approach to discipleship from the standpoint that it starts with you sharing your life. And this, we see Jesus inviting his disciples and he's saying, come follow me and I will make you into something. I'll make you into fishers of men. And and we see Jesus spending time and time and time with people. And so this is not the bullhorn approach or the picket sign approach to discipleship. This is, I'm going to invite you into my life.
Yeah. When I first came into contact with SCMD, Share, Connect, Minister, Disciple, I don't want to say it was explained badly, but I heard it badly.
Right. Well, you heard it based off of your context. And
Yeah. But just the verbiage of it, the share, my immediate thought was share is like, and I thought of this in the classic evangelical, like I'm evangelizing to people. I'm right. sharing the gospel with them.
Right.
Right. I'm going to share truth with yeah. them at this share level. And then the connect is then, I'm going to connect them to the church. Right.
Right.
And the connect, I wasn't terribly far off, but the share always seemed like, it felt like, or I'm going to connect with them. And if I'm connecting with them after I've shared truth with them, it seemed like those should have been reversed.
Right.
I remember, right. I was an intern with Paul and we were talking about that. I'm like, I almost want to reverse those two with our students. Like it seems like, and we had completely gotten those flipped around in the concept. And it really just didn't make sense. And it wasn't until later that you, as you explained it, it's sharing your life with them.
Right.
It's not right. about sharing truth, in a sense of a street preacher, or I'm going to Kirk Cameron, you know, well, you've told a lie, right? So you've you need a minute to win it sort of yeah, approach to the gospel.
Yeah, unidirectional conversation, right?
Yeah.
Like I talk and yeah. you listen and you don't get to give me feedback.
Uh-huh.
And I don't even know the context of your life.
Yeah, it's not I'm going to apologetic you into belief here, share environment. That's not the point. Which when I learned that, that made a lot more sense because I was coming from my previous ministry experiences. One of them was a camp that I worked on, and they had a similar philosophy. Now, keep in mind, this is geared towards a camp where you've got students coming in, and you're spending a week with a group of students, and then they're gone.
Right.
And then
right.
the next week, you know, 24 hours later, 48 hours later, it's probably 32 hours later, you've got an entirely new crew of...
Wash, rinse, repeat.
Yeah, wash, rinse, and repeat. You're back to cooking potatoes, and I have an entire new group of 18 students or so
right.
that I have to connect with, get to know, and somehow I'm going to minister to them during the week. And so yeah. their philosophy was befriend, encourage, model, challenge, BEMC.
Okay.
And so I tried to get Paul to switch to this actually at one point because I was like, this makes so much more sense. And then... then I think we finally got me straightened out on what share environments actually were. Because the befriend, like that's really what we're talking about at the right. share environment. This is right. making connections with people.
Right.
This is getting to know somebody, sharing your life with them, bringing them into what you're doing so that you can have that relational capital.
Right.
So that they listen to what you're actually going to say. If not, then you're just yelling at them from a street corner.
So the share environments are 99, I call them 99% relational.
That's fair.
99% relational, maybe even 100% relational, but 99% relational, which means all I'm interested in is getting to know you and you getting to know me. Mm-hmm. And the types of events that I saw in Post Falls in particular, we had the Coeur d'Alene event, Coeur d'Alene campus, and we had cooked burgers and hot dogs for our neighbors as they went walking by. We were like, hey, if you want a free meal, we just want to hang out with our neighbors and get to know folks. And we would literally invite the people directly around us, but as other folks would walk through, as they'd park and throughout the neighborhood to get to the car event. Mm-hmm. And this was a car show event. That was a pretty big event. So we did that.
That would be a large scale.
That'd be a large scale event. Another large scale event for a group of high school students. We had a typical 200 students on a Wednesday evening, but for our share events, we'd have 700-800 students. And one of them, we had a boxing match, and we had different high school students, some guys, some gals, that they were trained for a period of time, and then they had a short bout. It was 3 1-minute
rounds or something.
Yeah, 3 1-minute rounds, 30-second rounds. And
yeah.
I think it's 30-second rounds, and they were gassed. They were gassed. And the pastor, our youth pastor, he would invite the youth, or he'd invite the school president, class presidents from all the major schools to be involved, and he would...
Sure.
He would invest in them as people. So he was doing life with like 5-6 high school students that were inviting other people, and he was giving them a platform from a leadership standpoint. It was crazy, crazy smart on his part. They became the inviters. And at the end of the event, all we said was, hey, we have youth group here next week if you want to come check us out. It was a 30-second blip in a 2.5-hour event, and that was a share event where we were just doing life with people, and we had our leaders, our youth leaders, which was about 20 volunteers, 30 volunteers, spread out, engaging with folks, and it was highly relational.
Yeah.
So those are a couple of big events. Some smaller events, you know, you could be, you know, a care group doing a barbecue and inviting friends and neighbors.
Yeah, I think, you know, when we first got here, we did a couple of, you know, we were just like, let's do a couple brew nights. We had a group of friends that we'd get together and we'd brew beer.
Yeah.
You know, it's something we were going to do this anyway.
Right.
And we're like, well, let's be intentional. And this is an opportunity to invite people to get to know them because we're new to the community and we just want to meet new people and get to know them. Other things that I've done before have been like jams, like with while they're delicious, I like them much more than jellies. no, bad joke. The jam nights, like with musicians,
right.
I'm going to get, you know, a group of people together and we're just going to, you know, form a jam band to have a good time playing music, that sort of thing. You know, you form Facebook groups with, you're like, we're going to randomly go hike a mountain or go to a movie one night. And especially with Facebook nowadays, it's so easy for friends of friends to get invited and you can get all sorts of random connections there.
Right. Right.
But just taking stuff that I'm going to do anyway.
Yep.
And bringing people alongside that.
Yeah. Not even asking, you know, at this point of the conversation, you're not even asking about their theology. You're just asking, you know, what's your name? What do you do? What it gets you excited? And,
yeah.
But as you ask those questions, they're going to ask you some of those questions too. And at some point, your relationship with Christ comes out.
Oh, sure.
If you're being intentional.
I forgot about my most best awesome share environment. I can't believe I forgot about this.
Oh no.
Brenner. For crying out loud. That was the best share environment I've ever accidentally come up with.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell Brenner, us about that.
Brenner was pure accident. Who was the original? It was myself and Michelle Stockton and Daniel Peterson.
Yep.
I just talked to him last night.
That's a great crew right there.
Oh, man. That, like, that's all you need right there.
Yeah.
But what we did is we're like, we're young 20-something-year-olds, and it's stupid to cook for just one person. Like, nobody likes cooking for one person.
No.
At least I don't.
No.
I learned to cook for, like, I was on this houseboat cooking for 18, so whenever I, like, make spaghetti, it's for an army. I've successfully made spaghetti for one twice in my life.
Is
no
it a
joke.
Seven-nation army?
Yes, something yes. like a seven-nation army.
Okay.
call forward? Not a call back? I don't
it's
know.
A call forward.
I don't know. Something like yeah. that. Anyway, so we'd get together and we'd do Brenner. We'd make breakfast for dinner because who doesn't like breakfast foods? Mm. They're delicious. So no brainer.
Right.
I'm so cognizant of how many times I'm saying or This is the worst.
It is.
This is the literal worst. Anyway, we would make food and hang out and jabber about literally anything.
Just the three of you?
Just the three of us initially.
And then?
And then I was at work and I was talking with my buddy Kira and I was like, oh yeah, no, I'm making I'm making pancakes for dinner tonight. She's like, I love pancakes. I'm like, well, come join. It's me and Michelle and Daniel Peterson, who she didn't know. I'm like, hey, come on. Yeah, come join. Like, come on over for Brenner, right?
Let's do
and
this.
So Kira, not a believer. She's describes herself, and she wouldn't be mad at me for saying this. She describes herself as a recovering Mormon.
Gotcha.
She's very proud that she's a recovering Mormon.
May her recovery go well.
Yeah, what a crack up. Anyway, she came over for Brenner and immediately became best friends with all of us. It was wonderful. Specifically, her and Michelle were just wonderful, thick as thieves, because Michelle had a dog and Kira loves dogs. And who doesn't love Ollie? Like, Michelle, if you're listening to this,
Ollie.
Give Ollie a hug for me. I miss that pup.
Appreciate the pics that we see on Facebook all the time of Ollie and his adventures.
Oh my goodness, that dog, such a wonderful dog. Anyway, we would so Kira became a weekly, like, this was a standard occurrence, like, constantly coming over for this. And slowly, Brenner grew. Now, I had a Tuesday night care group that already met at my house,
right?
And so a lot of those people, we just were like, yeah, we're doing Brenner on Wednesday night. If you're bored, you want to come over and join and have food, like, you're welcome to join, you know, from care group, like, come join, hang out. But it's not like an intentional, like, we're talking Jesus at Brenner. Like, no, we're watching dumb YouTube videos.
Yeah.
Like, old Greg is coming out.
Yeah.
But we would do this and other people would get invited, like coworkers, friends, whatever, would get invited into this. Some of them clicked, some of them connected. I think of my friend Megan, who this is literally how she came to the church and to know Christ, like, and
right.
to be baptized. Was we introduced her at Brenner, and then eventually she was like, oh, well, you guys are hanging out on Tuesday night. Like, what are you doing there? I'm like, oh, that's our Jesus group. I was like, that's where the Jesus talk is going on. She texted us and we're like, well, we're hanging out and doing a bonfire afterwards anyway. So she's like, are you guys done? She texted us, y'all done with the Jesus? Like, you done talking about Jesus? And then she'd come over. And then pretty soon she shows up earlier. Right. And so this is how this translates in. But we didn't ever push anything.
Right. Right.
It's just creating a share environment, an right. environment that you can invite people into to be, I don't know, friendly with.
Yeah, and the key here is you really want to have to care and relate with people. If you don't want to, you just creating an environment, calling it a share environment, stamping it with the share.
Yeah, that's not going to do anything.
That's not going to do anything. But if you really want to do life with people and invite them in and care for them and hear about their story, and in that context, share your story too. And share who God means to you, because he's important to your story, which I think is another aspect of discipleship that we could talk down the road. But anyway, that's the share environment, and it is powerful. It's a great way to invite people in, and we see Jesus doing this.
Yeah, this is going to be something that we're going to be trumpeting for the foreseeable future.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
This is a big thing. This is a big thing. The shared environments, and finding those in your life for sure.
Creating space for people
for share.
Even accidentally.
Those are the best.
Yep.
Like when you overthink a share environment, probably going to suck. When you accidentally create one just because you're passionate about cooking pancakes.
Right.
The Lord is at work.
Yeah.
The Lord is at work with those.
Especially pancakes. Lord and pancakes. What could be better?
Not much. Only if bacon's involved. Speaking of bacon, let's talk about some Jewish stuff. That's funny.
Oh, man.
In the sermon on Sunday, I talked about this debate. There was a lot of debate between these multiple thoughts of Shammai, Hillel, and this. It was a Jewish debate originally. How many times have I said it now? I'm trying to say it as many times as I said in the sermon, and I don't think I can do it. It was amazing.
You're working hard.
It was amazing.
I see a sweat on your brow.
So this was a discussion that was being had amongst the Jewish church of what do we do with the Gentiles that come in, and I mentioned that these are the God-fearing Gentiles are known as the Theosebes.
Yep.
And you've got the brothers, which are the ethnically Jewish, and then the children of Abraham, which are also known as proselytes. These are the people that convert to Judaism. They take on Torah. They take on the 613 laws, take on circumcision, etc., and they become Jewish, but they're not ethnically Jewish. And then there's the God-fearing Gentiles, like Cornelius was. And so there's a discussion, there's debate, there's go back and forth between two main schools of thought. One of the schools of thought says that you are justified, because this is what that discussion centers around, is justification.
Yep.
What justifies you before God? What makes you righteous? What makes you justified? And one of the schools of thought, Shammai, says that you are justified through your works. You're justified by observance of the Mitzvot Maaseh HaTorah, which I forgot to say on Sunday, but I was going to say, but I forgot to say. So Mitzvot Maaseh HaTorah, I can say that one. Boom. But we talked about this back in James when we were covering the book of James, because this is the works of the law. What makes you Jewish separates the Jews from the rest of the world is that those 613 laws, right? Eating kosher, to some degree circumcision, mixing cloths, wearing weird tassels, observing weird festivals, etc., etc., etc.
Right.
These are the things that make you Jewish. This is what Shammai says. You're justified by these. And so, to be justified by God, or to be justified before God, you have to become Jewish in Shammai's school of thought. In Hillel's school of thought, the other one, you've got justification through faith. He says that justification comes through faith because Abraham was justified before the 613 come down.
Correct.
Right. And so this is the debate that's going on between these two. Now, this is a Jewish debate occurring. And these both predate Jesus, these schools of thought. These both precede Jesus, these rabbis.
Yeah,
and
so about 100 years.
Yeah. And so this is going on. Jesus weighs in on these, and now that you know about these, you can go look at Jesus's teachings and pull out, like, oh, he's siding with so-and-so here. I'm going to let you figure out who he's siding with. You can go research that on your own. But the conversation continues on because this is a Jewish church. Everything we've seen up till chapter 10, like, we haven't ran into Gentiles, really. They're just kind of on the fringes of the story.
Right.
Cornelius is the first Gentile, quote unquote, into the church. With that, this is a Jewish church. This is a Jewish movement. The Christian movement is the Jesus movement, because it's not even called Christians at this point. The Way is Jewish at this point. And so that conversation definitely weighs in, which sets the stage very much for Peter coming in. And we just want, we wanted to retouch on this because it is such a big part of everything coming in the book of Acts and all of the rest of the God, like the New Testament. The conversations are surrounding, what do we do with the Gentiles?
Yeah, which is, you know, that's an interesting conversation. And I feel like the conversation has since flipped where the Christian church of today asked the question, what do we do with the Jews?
Yep.
What does it take for a Jew to be in, as it were?
And, yeah.
And so that's, you know, like, do we today keep Jews at arm's length because
church history?
Because of church history, because of maybe even anti-Semitic, you know, thoughts. And I'm not, I don't mean the church necessarily here in Missoula.
Yeah, this is big church.
Global church.
Yeah.
You know, there's still, you know, I hear of people that still deal with anti-Semitism from, in particular, Catholic churches or Catholic students, Catholic kids, and maybe that's out of an immaturity of kids. I don't know.
Could be.
But yeah, who's in and who's out? That's been the conversation. Seems like it's still a conversation within the church today for lots of different reasons.
Yeah.
You know, if you're part of the LGBTQ community, are you in or are you out? If you're a Democrat or if you're a Republican,
are you in or are you out? Depending on this, depending on that, where...
Right.
Yeah, that definitely still occurs. It's changed. We're not arguing over the same things, but the base conversation of whether who's in, who's out, who's the Theosebes, you know. And to be clear, Hillel did not say that the Theosebes were in. His was that they were cousins, kind of like you're still not part of the brotherhood. Like you can't fully participate. Like if you show up to, you can show up to the synagogue, you know, to hear the teachings and stuff, but you can't read Torah, and you definitely couldn't talk.
So there's limitations.
Yeah, there's limitations. There's limitations for Hillel puts on it. But you are justified. Like you're justified, and we're glad you're here. You're welcome to worship with us. You just can't fully participate.
Man.
Which, oh, you could take that and apply that to some stances that we make in the church nowadays. And I'm not going to dig into that. I'm going to let you wrestle with that all on your own, because that's a tasty one.
Yeah, is history still repeating?
Yeah, I think...
Maybe it is.
I think we can learn from that. So,
go and find.
I just wanted to touch that a little bit again.
Yep.
Because it's important. It's the snowball that turns into an avalanche that we are still caught up in. With that, we want to go to the next one we wanted to talk about. Because I mentioned the I too am a man.
Yes, you are.
I too am a man. Oh, man.
Oh, man.
Yikes.
So where does this first come up?
The first time we see this, and this is where I mentioned it in the sermon, is in 10:26, verse 26. So we've got Peter has showed up at Cornelius's. He's had his vision. Cornelius has had his vision. People are coming together here.
What town are we in?
We're in Caesarea, not Capernaum. Caesarea.
We're in Caesarea.
We are in the Romani Romanin. It's literally named after Caesar. Yeah. This is a big Roman town.
And this is the epicenter for Roman...
Yeah, this is the center of Roman power in the Judean province.
Right, right. So, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful city. It was built to where when you were coming into port, the sun setting would just make the city look like a star.
Yeah, it was quite the feat. This is where I think, you have to double check me on this. Let me know if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure this is where Pilate lived slash hung out when he wasn't in Jerusalem because they were worried that the Jews were going to explode during Passover.
I believe you're correct.
Pretty sure this is his normal hangout.
They had an amphitheater, so they had theater there. They had chariot games.
Mm-hmm.
This was a very Roman.
Yeah, this is
very Roman town.
Yeah. So in 1026, let me find it here in my tiny little text of the Bible here. Peter entered, this is 25. When Peter entered, Cornelius met him and fell down at his feet and worshiped him. Okay.
What?
Which, all right. So to be fair, there's an inside joke again. Cornelius just saw a vision, had an angel show up. Everybody's always terrified when the angels show up. He's probably, you know, he's hearing from God. So, and God, you know, the angel shows up and tells him, like, go send for this Peter guy, right? So, if I'm Cornelius, I'm probably going to think Peter's a pretty big deal. This is what you do. What do you do for Caesar? You worship Caesar.
Right.
You
right.
worship your leaders. You worship people in authority in Roman culture. This is
not totally unheard of.
It's not unheard of. It's like it makes sense when you put it in that context. Very understandable. I would probably do that if I was in his shoes, if I had lived his life. 26. But Peter lifted him up, saying, "Stand up, I too am a man." And he talked with him. He went and found many persons gathered. We continue the story. But the "stand up, I too am a man." Now, this is interesting. Because when we go to chapter 12, so we fast forward a little bit.
Yep.
Same skip town. To chapter 12.
Same
skip
town.
Skip ahead. Herod, let's see here, the beginning of 12. At that time, Herod the king laid violent hands on some who belonged to the church. He killed James, the brother of John, with a sword, and we saw that it pleased the Jews. He proceeded to arrest Peter, right? And then Peter, we continue through chapter 12. I'm going to spark note it here. Peter's rescued. They break him out of prison. There's an angel. It's a cool story. You should read it. It's in the Bible. It's, I don't know, kind of important. There's wrapping a cloak around him. I'm literally just going through and pulling out phrases. So Peter came to himself. This is great. He realized this. He went to the house of Mother Mary, mother of John, whose other name was Mark. Blah, blah, blah. Skipping down. Herod searched for him, couldn't find him, killed the sentries because he's a big, mean guy. And then he went down from Judea to Caesarea and spent time there. So Herod is now in Caesarea. Okay. Went from Judea to Caesarea. And Herod's angry with the people of Tyre and Sidon, and they came to him on one accord, which... we see one accord showing up all the time through Acts. Mm. So you could go look that one up a bit. Having persuaded Blastus, the king's chamberlain, they asked for peace because their country depended on the king's country for food. On an appointed day, Herod put on his royal robes, took a seat upon the throne, and delivered an oration to them. And the people were shouting, I'm in verse 22 now, "The voice of God and not of a man." Immediately, an angel of the Lord struck him down because he did not give God the glory. And he was eaten by worms and breathed his last. But the word of God increased and multiplied. I just love that little follow-up.
Happy ending.
And then this little side tag at the very end. And Barnabas and Saul returned from Jerusalem when they had completed their service, bringing with them John, whose other name was Mark. Like, just a side note, asterisk at the bottom of that. But, no, so Herod, so we get this nice little mirror sort of thing going on, right? These two examples. We have Peter, who Cornelius falls down and worships. And how does Peter respond? By saying, no, stand up. I'm just a man.
I'm just
like,
a man.
Don't give, stop that. Don't worship me. Okay. And on the and what happens? God shows up and saves all these people, right?
Yep.
Okay. And then on the other side of this, you have Herod, who dons the royal robes, strikes this, you know, and everybody, and gives this speech, which Peter gave a speech. I don't know. A little out of order there, but I think you could draw the parallels. But the people are shouting the voice of God and not of a man. And does Herod stop them? No, he does not. Because does God slap him down?
Nope.
Yes, he does. God slaps Herod down something fierce. Worm food.
Fatality.
Like, it's just so good.
And it's, yeah, and there's a connection there back to Old Testament, as just far as the a judgment by God,
mm-hmm.
and the decomposition of the body. There's something about that, and I don't know what it is, honestly, like what the direct connection is, but
yeah. But just on the surface level, like that I kind of wanted to point this out just as an example of finding the connections, that as you're reading through these stories, it's not terribly difficult to find some surface connections. And that's how it starts. And then you fall down the rabbit hole of finding all of these different layers, which are just so fun. But looking for these surface connections gives so much more depth to the story. And for me, at least, helps me remember these stories way better. Like, now that I have that connection, I'm not going to forget either of these.
And it shows a difference in, you know, one man trying to establish himself,
mm-hmm.
and establish his rule, establish his kingdom, as it were.
Empire versus shalom.
Yes.
One leads to life, one leads to death. Look at that. I mean, that's just tasty stuff.
And so. Both are connected to... Both are connected, you know, to Cornelius in some way. I mean, presuming Cornelius is still serving Herod, you know, sometime later.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Cornelius, assumably, we don't know for sure, but unless we do. Is Cornelius mentioned again? I don't think he's mentioned again, right?
He's not mentioned again in scriptures.
So, like, assumably, he just remains a centurion. We're going to talk about that a little bit more in a minute here, but, you know, he's going to be, and they're both in Caesarea, take place in the same, this is the same town. There's just a lot of interesting correlations there.
Yeah. If Cornelius watched both events, like, this would have to be a reminder to
him
of what it means to follow Christ. Like, if he's forgetting it all,
mm-hmm.
he's being reminded.
Yeah. Oh man, I didn't think of, like, what if you were there to witness both of those, what the impact would be on that.
Yeah, because it happens in the same town. Why is Luke like it seems like it's just an odd story. Like, how does this story relate to anything else mm-hmm. around it?
Other than just being the death of this guy that.
But he's not really mentioned, you know, there's.
And he shows up a little bit, you know, and other than he had just been persecuting and, you know, killing off a couple of the disciples and trying to kill Peter.
Right.
You know.
Seems like everybody was named Herod at that time, too, because.
Common name.
Yeah, they all seem to. It's kind of like Candace of Ethiopia. That seemed to be a common name for.
Well, if names are powerful and Herod's a powerful guy.
Right.
Name your kid after Herod so he becomes powerful.
Gotta do it.
Yeah, logically makes sense. So next tasty tidboot. Apparently I'm like a Canadian now. Hey, tidboot, eh? Seven men. If you include Peter, seven men go to the Gentiles.
Yeah, so Peter in chapter 11 reports to the church what has taken place with Cornelius. And he says, and behold, at that very moment, starting in verse 11, at that very moment, three men arrived at the house in which we were sent from Caesarea, or sent to me from Caesarea. And the Spirit told me to go with them, making no distinction. These six brothers also accompanied me, and we entered the man's house. And so there's seven Jewish men all together, Peter and six.
Six plus one is seven. Okay.
Whew. Nailed it.
Math.
So these seven men experience for the first time the Holy Spirit falling on Gentiles, which there's got to be a correlation there, you know, just from a Jewish mindset that, you know, how many people do you have to be able to witness this event, to really make this event, you know, something that you trust? And so seven seems like a decent number.
Seven's a number of completion?
Yeah. So,
like, yeah.
So there's that. But then I also wonder if there's some kind of connection to a story that Peter relates in chapter 13. So this is a couple chapters later. But he's talking about their history as a nation. The God of this people, Israel, chose our fathers. I'm starting in verse 17. So the God of...
This is Peter talking in 13?
This is Peter talking. Nope, this is Paul.
Paul, okay, yeah.
This is Paul.
Paul talking in Antioch, right?
Right.
Yeah. So he's talking in the... Paul is talking in the... Oh, pulling a blank. I want to say Sabbath, but that's not right. On the Sabbath at the Jewish temple thing. Synagogue. That's the word. Wow. Afternoon.
So this is a reference I'll use. The God of this people, Israel, chose our fathers and made the people great during their stay in the land of Egypt, and were with uplifted arm, he led them out of it. And for about 40 years, he put up with them in the wilderness. And after destroying seven nations in the land of Canaan, he gave them their land as an inheritance. And so Paul is talking about their history, the history of the Jews, and how there were seven nations that God disposed of in order to give the Jewish nation a place, a home. In contrast, when Peter goes to Cornelius, there's seven men that invite the Gentiles into the conversation of what it means to follow Christ.
Yeah. That definitely seems to be a bit of a correlation.
It seems like God is...
Could be redeeming.
Redeeming.
That seems like something God does. Kind of over and over and over again.
So early in the history of God's people, death was a tool that was being used.
Sure.
And and I kind of equate this to when you're raising a kid. When they're 2 years old, you use different tactics with them versus when they're 15 years old. So with a two-year-old, if they go to touch something hot, you may slap their hand so that they learn that touching that thing would harm them.
Yeah.
And the slap on the hand is better than the result otherwise. If you let them touch a hot stove, you know, the medical attention that you have to apply is drastically different than having a slap on the hand. And yet, if you're still doing that with your kids when they're, you know, 15, 16, 20, 30, 50, you know, like something's off.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not a bad analogy. It's not a bad analogy.
And so maybe as God's been introducing himself to the world through Israel,
he meets people where they're at.
And the conversation starts off in its infancy and it changes over time. And eventually you could have a full-grown conversation.
Eventually, yeah, we've moved beyond the, well, now death is not a tool that's needed. because you as a people have moved beyond that.
Right. Now let's just talk about life.
Yeah. No, that's definitely a... I wrestle with that one a little bit. And Old Testament in general, I wrestle with how to justify, like, the book of Joshua, for example, or the story of Samson.
Right.
Where you... these are God's people. Like Joshua, they go in and then like seven nations that they're wrecking. You know, how many people died?
Right.
You know?
Right.
And they're destroying these, and God commands them to do some things that just sound terrible. But there's that perspective of this is the world that they lived in at that point.
Right.
Okay. So is God, question for myself, is that where, is God meeting them where they're at? Okay. All right. That's possibility. Definitely something that I have to, I wrestle with, and that, you know, something that I work through figuring that out. The other thing is also putting into context what was occurring in those nations that they, that God commands them to go in and clean house with.
Right.
You know,
right.
I know we see a lot of stuff online now about Molech, right? With the abortion conversation. That's been a popular, they like to throw a lot of memes up now about Molech or Baal and sacrificing children they would sacrifice babies to, they would, I think, if I remember correct, it's Baal that they did this with, but not 100% sure if I got that one right, but I remember one of them, they would sacrifice babies to this god by placing them in a metal bowl, and the metal bowl is over a fire, and they're burning babies alive.
Oh, man.
And one thing that you constantly, and so when you take that and you say, okay, well, why would God command them to do that to these, you know, to do that sort of atrocity to a nation, right?
To wipe them out.
There's one common theme that God never puts up with, and God always responds to the cries of the oppressed.
Right.
The Zedekah, where God hears the cries of the oppressed. They cry out, the Zedekah. And so because, and you don't hear that in this story, we don't necessarily know that just from reading the biblical text. We have to do some digging and get the historical context of they're sacrificing babies in a horrible fashion, burning them alive as worship to their gods. And maybe now that changes our perspective on why a loving God would come in and put an end to a nation that is doing that. When I learned that, that definitely shifted my perspective.
Yeah, and it's not to say that these aren't hard conversations. And I think apparently God sees life and death differently than you and I do, just in the way he talks about it. He talks about, you know, Jesus talks about it in terms of sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Lazarus is sleeping. And so maybe it's our perspective too on life and death and what that looks like. I can't speak to all those things for everybody else. You know, I've wrestled through some of those things. Invite you guys to do the same. But yeah, there seems to be some connection here. The listing of six people, you know, in Peter's recount, that must be significant in some way or shape or form. And what does that mean? And so these are just a couple of possibilities. Love for you guys to kind of wrestle with what that looks like and let us know what you think.
Yeah, definitely the seven nations coming in to sending seven to the Gentiles as they're brought back in, if you will, to the Holy Land. brought back into the family. That there's something there. But the last thing we wanted to talk about here was the questions that Cornelius has to deal with now. At the end of the story, it says Cornelius invited him to stay for a few days.
Right.
Right. And I alluded to this in the sermon. I mentioned this a little bit. But for one, Cornelius is a centurion. Now, as an officer, he would have to go pledge allegiance to Caesar every year on Caesar's birthday. I think it was on his birthday, if I remember correctly. And so he would go renew this oath of allegiance once a year. And part of this oath of allegiance is claiming that Caesar is God. He's Lord of Lords and, you know, man, God on earth or whatever, like there, and worshiping Caesar, right? Well, if I'm Cornelius, as a Theosebes, as a God-fearer, somebody interested in the God of Israel, that's fine. I can be interested in the God of Israel, but I'm not in, so I can be interested and still go commit to Caesar, right? I'm convinced that once the Holy Spirit hits them, they're in, and Cornelius is going to be struggling with what do I do with that conversation?
Right.
How does he continue living as a centurion? That's just one aspect. Like, this is...
I mean, he's the occupying force.
Yeah, he's an occupying force in the nation that he just became a part of. Like, oh man, there's so many questions that he probably has to wrestle with.
Right.
And you know, and I'm getting this from Marty. This is from Marty's class back in the day. Discussion of this, of, you know, he threw out this question of, what does Cornelius do? Because he has to go proclaim allegiance to Caesar versus, you know, what he's now done. If he doesn't, it's treason and he could die. Right?
Yep.
Now, the thing here is there's the Jewish exception. Now, what Rome did, and this is, they only did this with the Jews, was... they said, no, you don't have to, you can keep your religion. You don't have to worship the other gods. You can keep your religion. And this is fascinating that it happened. This is God at work.
Right.
This is God at work and making the Jews stand out, because Rome did this with no other culture. The Jewish exception. Right. And so even though Cornelius doesn't have to take on circumcision, doesn't have to take on the 613 to be in, like the Holy Spirit's on him, boom, good, done, in. And Peter's like, yep, let's baptize him. Right. Even though that's already happened for Cornelius, like, I think part of the debate as they continue forward is, at least for Cornelius or the Romans coming into the faith, is it safer for me to just become Jewish?
Right.
Even though I don't have to take on this yoke, do I still take on this yoke just because that's the only way for me to keep my head? And I'm curious, and I need to research this more, is that partially why all the Christians are dying later on, as we go on through Rome and all of the Christians are being brutally oppressed by Rome, you know, and being slaughtered in arenas and stuff? Is this, how does that tie in? Do the ones that convert to Judaism, do the Jewish Christians, are they martyred in the same fashion? Or is it just the Gentile Christians that aren't? I need to research that more, and if you have information on that, like, I would love to hear from you on this, because it's fascinating to me of what the implications are for this.
Well, having their own gospel, like whoever Caesar, he has his gospel, and sure. then the Christians have their gospel, and these kingdoms were opposed.
Yeah.
And so for you to say, I am now a follower of the true Son of God,
mm-hmm.
you know, that is, that's taking things further than...
Than just the Jewish.
Than just the Jewish, because the Jews really never really bought into this concept of God in the flesh.
Mm.
And so you could just call that their... You know, I can imagine you could just call that their ignorance, their superstition. Like, it's a small sect in a small, inconsequential part of the world. You know,
speaking from the Roman, from Caesar's perspective.
Yeah,
perspective. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, like these backwoods people. I mean, I'm just imagining what this conversation looks like. These backwoods people, they can't even picture God putting on flesh. Like, how small is their God? They can't even put on flesh. You know.
Okay.
And so, but the Christians were different. Their God put on flesh. He has his own gospel.
Yeah. That's direct competition.
And these people refuse to bow their knee to me. And their religion isn't located in some backwoods town.
Because it's spread.
It's spreading. Like they worship here.
As opposed to Rome infecting, infecting or affecting the rest of the world, and the Roman gods spreading and Caesar worship spreading, this is now infecting your empire.
Well, everything about Rome that made Rome move forward quickly, and the culture and all that, the highways, the common language, all those things that made having a Roman Empire effective, made the transformation and the transition and the moving forward of the gospel super simple and easy. Like,
mm-hmm.
like these highways, the common language, you know, the ability to write a letter and send that across multiple nations and have it be read and understood,
sure,
was super significant to the Christian movement moving quickly forward. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's almost, in all the ways that Rome fell short, Christianity like outshined, you know, like, I see your gospel and I raise you one.
And one. And one. Yeah.
And so I think that's what brought the persecution, because it was my gospel versus your gospel.
Yeah.
My Son of God versus your Son of God. Hmm. My kingdom versus your kingdom.
Sure.
Why aren't you bowing your knee towards me? These people are multiplying. Why is this multiplying? We treat them with utter disrespect, and yet they multiply. We persecute them, and it causes them to grow more.
It's like a bad penny.
It's maddening. It's like adding water to a gremlin.
Whack-a-mole.
The most lovable gremlin ever.
Aww. It's like, instead of gremlins, they turn into Furbies.
No, Furbies.
Furby. All right, that's enough of that. All right, well, there are plenty of thoughts for you. That's a boatload of toenail clippings or footnotes or something.
We did it. We went over an hour.
I did. Oh, for crying out loud. I'm gonna have to cut some, at least. I refuse. We won't have a footnotes episode over an hour. But regardless of that, we are glad that you joined us. We hope to see you. Well, it'd be nice to see you on Sunday. So come join us.
Yeah, come join us.
We got services at the Hilton at 10:30. If you're not in the area, we're glad you're listening too. Shoot us an email. But we'd love to hear from you. Have a wonderful week.
Peace.
You've been listening to Footnotes on the Mission Ridge podcast. For more information about Mission Ridge, please visit our website at missionridge.church. Thanks for tuning in. We hope the rest of your week is straight up hashtag blessed, and that you'll join us again next week for more Footnotes.